Hello and welcome to the Plant-Based Business Podcast brought to you by us here at Feevolution. Today is a very special day because I'm joined by our very own Stefan Stegman, not only partner in Feevolution, but also founder of Shop Like You Give a Damn and board member of the Fee Entrepreneurs Network. Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Damien. It's going really well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, look, it's an absolute pleasure. So for listeners, this is a very special intro episode to Stefan because Stefan is a partner in Feevolution. Last year, Judy and I decided to partner with Mikhail van Druzen, but also Stefan and Tristan to change the business and, you know, create our new awesome platform that's connecting startups with investors. And Stefan has been very instrumental in helping us get there. But he's also a first-rate communicator and network builder, and he is going to be joining Judy and I as co-host of the Plant-Based Business Podcast. So you'll hear him pop up with these special bonus episodes in the coming weeks. But today is about finding a bit more about his journey as an entrepreneur, which is fascinating. So we'll get into it.
Yes. Looking forward. Let's do this.
On the show, we always take it right back to the beginning. So tell me a little bit about how you became the entrepreneur today and your upbringing. I'd be really interested to hear if you were always interested in entrepreneurship.
I don't think so. I do have an interesting background, I think. I moved 18 times until I was 8.
That's incredible, really.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot. And it was incredible. I lived in Germany, Curacao, US, United States, and the Netherlands. And I moved after that another 10 times. So I moved a total of 28 times now.
Wow.
And this affects people differently. And it affected me in the way that I always, you know, try to connect with people quite quickly. And this made me somebody really appreciating connection with people. Also, my father he wasn't an entrepreneur for sure. He always started businesses, but he was more of a starter than he was like a builder. So he would start something and then move a few months later to a different location and do the same thing again. So that's why we moved a lot, just because he liked starting businesses. But he was actually, sorry, Dad, if you're listening, but you're quite the bad entrepreneur. he was left with zero money, and we never had any money. But I think I got the spirit from him for sure. But after when I was 8, the moving stopped because my dad and my mom got separated. They separated whilst we were on vacation in the Netherlands. Actually, they were on a phone call, and it was just like, we'll stop. I don't want to be, you know, moving around anymore. I want like a home base. That was my mother, and we stayed in the Netherlands. So from that point on, the entrepreneurial spirit actually left my family, because I wouldn't see my father for another 20 years. So this spirit wasn't with me anymore. So, but I think it took me in the first 8 years of my life.
Yeah, it's quite a unique experience. Did you have a lot of pen pals?
Well, not really. I think the internet wasn't the thing yet, because, you know, I'm a little too old for that. I actually only started working on the internet when I was 18 or 19, I think. Before that, I didn't even have a computer that was more than black and white monitor. No, I didn't have any pen pals. Maybe I think I started had my first pen pal when I was 15. So that doesn't really count.
Maybe there's something in the fact that you moved around so much and you were disconnected from maybe these people you felt very quickly connected to that made you interested in the power of technology to connect people. What do you think?
That's for sure. It made me help connect with people quite easily, but it also made me accept that I was leaving people behind. And this resulted in, you know, multiple times in hurting people, I think. But for me, for these people, I was their best friend. They were my best friend. But in that instance, when you move a lot and that's normal for you, you don't really think about it twice, especially when you're 7 or 8 or 6. You don't have that concept of that you're being a bad friend or something. But I've hurt quite a lot of people by moving. I know this. But you know, I was 8, so you can't really hold it against me. But yeah, so leaving people behind and connecting with people was easy for me. But I must say, over the years, it did change, because now I am someone who really values friendship, and it's like building block for me. I can't do without.
That's interesting. And so you said you started working on the internet when you were like 18, 19. Tell us about that. What did you do?
So basically, I my mom remarried. It was not a good marriage. It was a kind of an abusive husband kind of situation. But he did inspire me to a certain point with a few things, and he was working at the Albert Heijn, basically. So it's the big Dutch chain of supermarkets, the biggest. And he inspired me to want to work in a supermarket.
Wow.
I don't know if that's like, it was an intentional bad thing. I mean, he did a lot of intentional bad stuff to fuck with us. Can I say fuck on a podcast? I think I can, right?
We can say fuck on this podcast. It's absolutely fine.
So I think he did intentionally, you know, screw with us a lot. But I don't think this was the case for the specific supermarket thing, because he was working as a manager somewhere in a supermarket, and he managed a lot of, I think he managed even a branch. And I got the idea to work in the supermarket and also do a specific education alongside it and grow to be a supermarket manager. And I thought that was a good idea. But the whole year, luckily, was a disaster. Everything went wrong. I always made friends, and here everybody hated me. I didn't understand why, but they just didn't like me, so they didn't give me a chance. So after a year, and this was after my high school. So after that, I tried to find I found something else, and then there was this internet education, this internet college. And I thought, hey, that's cool. I think I like computers. I have like this very old one. Let's see what that's all about. And then it, you know, that was me hitting home. It was perfect. The match with me in the internet, it worked.
It sounds like an interesting start to your career. And you find the internet. And what kind of companies do you work for?
So it all starts with my college, right? I had this quite unconventional college where you, from the get-go, from day one, you have 3 days you work on a project and only 2 days of, you know, sitting in classes and listening to teachers and professors and all that. So you start working and putting everything into practice directly. So they teach you basically to code, and then you have to code for a company. They teach you to write a strategy. You have to write a strategy for a company. It's always that theoretical and practical combination of stuff. So the first year is basically you do projects for school, little companies, they have some project. But then the second, third, and fourth year, you actually do it for companies. So I enrolled in a few companies. And at the second one, it is basically like a small paid internship. We were building a website, and I was together with my co-student at the time, was one of the only people in the Netherlands who knew about Salesforce. So we were doing Salesforce, and it was early 2000s. Nobody knew about it, but we knew everything about Salesforce. So we were doing the Salesforce, but also building websites. And then they were like, hey, can you build a website for us as well? And then another company was, hey, you want to build a website? This was our second year in college. And we were like, yeah, building websites is nice. We can get some extra money in. And we started building websites, and I started designing them. And I was really bad at it. I even tried to code, was really bad at it. And then eventually, because I was so bad at designing and coding, I ended up in the project management version of the internet, basically. And that's where it all started, managing web projects just during college. And then in my last year, I connected with somebody I met during my first internship in second year. And this person thought, hey, let's build a business together. So in the fourth year, we had an entrepreneurial year where you could build a business and you would succeed in graduate if you would succeed in building a good business in 1 year. So it was a pretty cool trajectory.
That's very cool. It's very entrepreneurial.
Very entrepreneurial, yes. And I really like that. So I worked together with this guy, my friend Sven, who I still talk to basically every week. We play Magic, the nerds we are.
What is Magic?
Magic the Gathering. That's it's like the original card game where all the Pokemon cards and all the Yu-Gi-Oh cards come from. And it's still active, and they have an online game version, and it's super nerdy.
Okay, you've just outed yourself as a nerd to all of our listeners, but I think you're in good company. We're all pretty nerdy bunch.
I really love that stuff. So, but the fun thing is, Sven and I are like exactly the opposite, like personality. So we work together really well. We did a Myers and Briggs test once, and we were literal. Every letter was the opposite letter. So we are literally the opposite people, and we really, you know, helped each other out and propelled each other forward. So we worked together there in the last year of this college, and And we built this company that eventually we almost sold in 1 year. That was pretty cool. But then the company we almost sold it to, they, well, let's say fuck again, because we can't, they fucked us. And we were on the day of the signing, the contract, and they were like, nah, we're not going to sign it. We're going to, you know, we're going to steal it. And if you don't like that, you can sue us. We have like a big investment company of $7 billion behind us. So, you know, see if how long you last. So that was my first real induction into raising capital and selling
your company. When it came to selling the company, were they going to give you any money with this kind of, they were just like, you're going to sign this contract and what was going to happen?
So they were going to give us money. So we wanted to sell it. I think it was, we weren't that far in the company. I think we wanted to sell it for 350,000 euros.
Yeah.
Quite a lot if you're 21, right?
Oh yeah, it's loads. It's loads now.
Yeah, so is now. So is now. Yeah, definitely. And so we were really happy. And then they were just like, no, we're not going to sign. And if you don't, and we're going to steal it and we're just going to rebuild it. Everything you showed us, we're just going to copy it and we're going to deploy it ourselves. And if you don't like it, just sue us.
Didn't have an NDA or anything.
Nope. We were stupid.
Well, look, this is why we have the Plant-Based Business Podcast, because people can learn these lessons, right? If you're going to sell your company, have an NDA in place.
Yes. Yes. That's really important. I mean, it's such an interesting learning experience, that one. So in the end, I did this company, like, was absorbed by another company we built this this platform with. It was actually a sort of a marketplace already, and didn't know it at the time, though, that it was called a marketplace. But I continue working for agencies, and in the end, I ended up making educational courses, actually, for digital marketers. And so in this time, I tried a lot of things entrepreneurial wise, but in the end, nothing with a real passion, nothing with, like, I never went for it 100%. It was always on the side for a long time.
What I'm interested in is, how did you recover from that blow of like selling, trying to come so close to selling your company and then it falling apart?
I think it made me trust my gut more. I didn't like the person we were working with, and now I knew why. And it's always this two sides of the same coin. You don't want to judge a book by its cover, right? When you meet someone and you have a feeling about them in 10 seconds or a minute or maybe 5 minutes, you're like, I don't like this person. And I'm always conflicted, because I don't want to be the one judging a book by its cover. But on the other hand, I've gotten to know that my instinct's quite good. And when I don't like somebody, it's probably for a reason. So and this was one of those anchoring moments, really, you know, honing in on that feeling and just accepting it as a safety mechanism, I think.
So trusting your gut has become quite an important thing for you in your entrepreneurial life.
Yes. Actually, I read a book on it. I read it in Dutch. I don't know there's probably an English version. It's called the Beautiful, I'll just roughly translate it. It's called The Beautiful Food Machine, and it's about the intestines, where the intestines, when you're born and you're still in the tummy, your intestines are connected with a cord to the brain, and basically your intestines are the second brain and make most decisions. So when people are talking about their intuition or their gut feeling, they're actually talking about their second brain that makes decisions. So there's a lot of science backing up that the intestines really make decisions. So
there's also a book that I recommend to listeners called Blink by Malcolm Gladwell. And that's, you know, it's all about actually sometimes the decisions that are rooted in data and science are less successful than the ones that are based on intuition. And it's quite an interesting thing as an entrepreneur to think about.
Yeah, definitely is. So really trust the gut. That's what I learned from that experience.
So with your story, you have about 10 years, right? Managing projects, building websites, working in technology.
18 years, gosh. Yeah.
Showing your age here.
From the first, from the first website I built and asked money for it, it's 18 years already. Time flies.
Wow, time does fly. And then you finally decide, okay, I'm going to step out a bit and start my own company in an area that you become passionate about, vegan fashion. And that's what is now Shop Like You Give a Damn. Tell us about that story and why vegan fashion, because, you know, as an entrepreneur, we look at opportunity and impact, and, you know, the impact is undoubtedly huge with vegan fashion, but the opportunity at this moment in time is maybe less so, because the money isn't maybe as readily available. Tell us why and what happened.
Yeah, looking at raising capital, that's definitely true. I think most capital in the vegan business will go to food. And that's, you know, looking at the Maslow pyramid, that makes sense. People need to eat first. So if you want to change the world, let's start where you know, people need to change. And you know, the thing people do most, and that's eat and drink. The second thing would be, you know, you're feeling safe. And the third thing in the Maslow pyramid would be connecting with people. And what fashion does is, you know, tells other people a little bit about you. So that would be the next step. So I believe, if we believe Maslow, his pyramid to be true, that the next big wave of, you know, companies really growing and making a blitz scaling, basically, that these companies will be fashion companies. But that's not why I started it, of course. That's not the, the reasoning behind it. It all started with frustration. And it all started with a lucky pigeon poo. So to bring it back, it was the 1st of April, and it's not a joke. It's a true story. Mm-hmm. So April Fools, 1st of April, I was in Berlin with my now co-founder, Alex, who I tried to have a different company with before. So we knew each other quite well, and we knew we liked running a business together. But we just didn't have a new idea to work on. So we just, you know, were friends and having fun. We were in Berlin with another friend of mine, Gabriel, and we were there for a half a marathon to run. But we all had injuries, so we just went there for beers. So this I think it was a Saturday morning on the 1st of April in 2017. We were sitting in the sun having a coffee with our hangovers, and there was this pigeon. It shat right on Alex, my co-founder, and it was a bad one. We were laughing so hard, and we went inside, and this lady at the counter was like, "Oh, that's good luck. That's the bestest of things that can happen. Pigeon poo is the best." And she was really celebrating this pigeon poo. and around this situation, so we cleaned up the pigeon poo, and then the epiphany happened, where I was complaining about me not as a vegan, fresh vegan. I think I was a vegan for a year and a half now. I was frustrated with the fact that I couldn't find any clothes, right? I couldn't find any jeans without the leather patch, or good shirts without like a piece of leather in a corner, or without wool, or without silk, or without anything animal derived. So I was really frustrated, and I was like bantering. Is bantering a good word here? I was just really going on, and Alice and I were, and Gabriel, we were talking, and then it just hit me. If I'm having this problem, a lot of other people will probably have this problem too. And that's when the light went on. And basically the idea for Shop Like Give It Em was born.
Amazing. So then you have the idea in 2017. How long was it before you got your marketplace, right?
Yeah.
How long before you brought all that together?
Well, we didn't launch as a marketplace, actually. We launched as an affiliate platform. We just looked at what platforms we thought made sense and would, you know, not cost a lot of time to build ourselves. And we thought an affiliate platform was really smart. We had some examples of affiliate platforms in the world that work really well. And we started with that. And so this was the 1st of April. Then we thought about what type of business do we want to build? Do we want to have a web shop or whatever? And we came to the affiliate platform. And in the end, we thought we'll launch at the end of 2017, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that didn't work. We launched 2 days before Kim and I got married on the 31st of July in 2018. So that was the worst time to launch, because, you know, after that, we were getting married and we didn't have the time to work on our business. But that's how it played out. It was the worst timing. And then we went on a honeymoon for a month, so we couldn't work on the business again. But we did. That was how it started. After we came back, I set up all these talks with investors at that specific time, and we started talking to investors, and basically what we heard for a few months was, that's a stupid business model, affiliate platforms, because what you're going to be doing is you're going to be investing time, money, and energy in getting people to your platform just to send them away again to get a kickback fee. That's stupid. You really need to own the customers, as they all said. It was like as if they had like discussed this together and in a group and said, let's tell Stefan that he needs to own the customer. So because in this way you have the data, you have you know how people are interacting with your products, you know which products they like, which ones they put in the shopping cart, which ones they don't. You have their email address, so you have a lot more data to work with. So after only being live as an affiliate platform for 4 months, we decided we need something else. We started researching, and then we came on drop shipping platform or a marketplace. And then after 5 or 6 weeks of deliberation, I think we landed on marketplace as a solid choice. And then I showed this to a few people I was talking, a few mentors of mine. So, hey, does this make sense? And then one of these mentors was the first person who said, hey, I'd like to invest. And I was like, huh? I didn't even know you were an investor. He said, neither did I. But now I want to invest. This is a good business model. So that's how it started. And then we came online as a market. Well, it took us 5 months, I think, to get it all. No, 4 months to get it all up and running as a marketplace. And we launched on the 17th of April, 2019. Yeah.
Amazing. Love the story. It's so interesting. You think you know what you want to do, and you go and test it, and people are like, maybe not. But I think that's the nature of building businesses on the web, right? Sometimes you need to iterate and adapt and change your direction.
I think it's really important to stay open and to learn, because you could be a stubborn person who says, no, I chose this direction, let's go with this, but it doesn't help you really. And this way with the marketplace, we were also able to help our customers, like the people actually shopping, and give them a better experience. So it made a lot of sense. So it's, I think, you know, really listening to the needs of all your stakeholders, your customers, your potential investors, yourself, is really important. You need to stay agile as a person and as a business.
No, I agree. And what do you think is driving the growth in vegan fashion brands at the moment? What do you think are the things that are making consumers start to make those choices and change the way they dress to fit their lifestyles?
Well, I think people are getting sick of companies hurting the world, hurting the planet, the people, the animals. And people are inherently good people, and they don't want to hurt other people. They don't want to, if they know, if they buy a specific pair of, jeans, there are chemicals used that are dropped in the river, and then people drink those chemicals and they grow, for instance, 6 toes because of all that stuff. And this is really true. There's a lot of places in the world, especially India, Bangladesh, where the rivers are so polluted that people actually mutate. If you know these stories, you will be okay with paying 10 pounds or euros or dollars more for a pair of jeans, because you don't want to contribute to those nasty practices. So I would say, because people are good people, but most people just don't know how bad stuff really is in the fashion industry. I would say, making sure that people do know and appealing to their ethical side, they will make the better choice, and they want to make the better choice. Not like people are forced to. They just don't want to hurt people. They don't want to hurt animals. They don't want to hurt the planet. So, and it's becoming more and more obvious that the current establishment of the companies are hurting a lot of people, are hurting the planet, are hurting animals, and people are being fed up with it. Especially now in the limelight of the Corona situation, right? It's all, everybody is just sick of it. So I think there's a big precedent for ethical companies now to take a stance and educate themselves first, and then share what they've learned with their target group, and make sure that we can make a change together for the better.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with all of that. But one of the things I think about, when I think of ethical fashion, for lack of a better term, it is expensive. It is more expensive than, going to your high street retailer and buying, a pair of jeans for £10. And what we're offering needs to be as accessible as possible to the widest amount of people. Do you see there being a situation in the next 10 years where costs are able to be driven down a little bit? Because I look at vegan fashion, right? And I think there's the vegan premium on that is quite clear. You're paying more for the ethical stamp. I guess as a marketplace, it's quite a tricky one, because your job is to get people to buy as much products as possible. However, you want them to do it in a sustainable way, in a way that makes it accessible to everyone. Are there things you do to try and like educate the consumers and talk about, you know, the need to kind of make things last, that those kind of things?
There's a lot of questions.
Oh no, sorry, yeah, I've just gone having a big brainful.
A lot of questions, but also a lot of answers to every question. Just you, a lot of angles and answers to those questions. So let me try to, you know, answer a few at least. So first of all, buying stuff is never sustainable, right?
Yeah.
If you're doing it right, it could be ethical, but it's never sustainable. We're always taking stuff from the earth. And if you're cutting down a tree for a paper bag, that tree, all the carbon emissions, it will just release everything again, all the carbon emissions, right? Because they were holding it and now the tree is cut. So it's released back, and it will take basically 40 years for the tree, for the new planted tree to actually get all the carbon emissions back from the atmosphere and back into the ground. So it's always a bad thing. We're always... So let's first of all start by saying buying stuff is sustainable. Being naked would be the most sustainable thing. But let's all be naked somewhere. That would be great. But next to that, of course, people need to clothe themselves, especially in colder places. And of course, you know, you don't want to be going naked through Amsterdam or London. That would be frowned upon at the least. But it is smart to just be really mindful of your clothes. Don't buy clothes because you have a party. Buy a nice slow fashion piece of a color that will last you 10, 20 years, made from materials that are very durable, and use that a lot. There's a lot to say for fixing stuff. I bring my clothes to the tailor almost every month. There's something broken and I make sure it gets fixed, or better even, fix it yourself. But you know, I'm really bad with a needle and a thread. So
I think I've got a spin-off business for you. Fix like you give a damn.
I like that. So in essence, we always encourage people to buy as less as possible. Don't buy because you need to buy. Only buy when you need stuff. And when you buy it, buy it from a company that, you know, harms the least.
Hello, Damien here, co-founder of Fevolution. So at Fevolution, interviewing great founders is just one part of what we do. Our mission as a company is to create a world where plant-based and cell-based businesses grow faster in their work to create solutions for a better world. And as a founder, I've been through several investment rounds. I can tell you they can be a long, drawn-out process. So earlier this year at Fevolution, we sat down to create an ecosystem and powerful tool to help startups and investors find each other quickly and efficiently. This new platform is now in a live beta. We have hundreds of startups currently fundraising on the Fevolution platform and are being seen by professional investors looking to fund the next generation of plant-based and cell-based businesses. For investors, you can learn more by visiting www.fevolution.com/investors. And joining is simple, and we've already had founding members including Blue Horizon Corporation, Dismatrix, Veg Capital, Carol United, New Crop Capital, Capital Fee, and more. And if you're a startup, you can join right now and it's free. Simply head to fevolution.com and upload your investment round. And we look forward to seeing you all there to create solutions for a better world together. What I'm interested in, what things are really exciting you in vegan fashion? Because you're probably closer to all the different innovations going on and different products coming out than anyone else I know. What's exciting you right now?
Well, what is just, you know, very superficial exciting is that the sustainable pieces are getting more attention. They are, you know, getting more attention from real good designers. So everything is, you know, becoming really beautiful. We have beautiful pieces. And a few years ago, there weren't that many because there weren't a lot of companies, you know, having the money or to really hire good designers, or not a lot of designers who were actually focusing on sustainable fashion, designing beautiful stuff. So we have that now. There's a lot of beautiful fashion going around, a lot of beautiful trainers, sneakers, depending on the country you're in, and pieces everywhere. And if you combine that with cool materials like, you know, cactus leather or pineapple leather or even mushroom leather, you even have wine leather and coffee waste leather. You have so much cool materials that not all are super sustainable yet, but we are working on these innovations. And it's really exciting to see that we can make basically anything from anything if we want. And that's really exciting to me, because we don't need animals to, we don't need plastics to create stuff. We have all these different more organic materials we can work with. And people are doing an amazing job creating beautiful pieces with them. So that's really exciting to me.
Oh, it's super exciting. And I think the podcast, the Come Onto the Podcast now, is really going to benefit from your insights in this area, because, you know, I'm a food and technology entrepreneur, media entrepreneur, essentially. They're my areas of expertise. And to, I think to have someone with such deep knowledge of the fashion industry is really going to add a lot of value to you guys, the listeners. So let's come onto the podcast. So you're going to be joining me and Judy as co-hosts of the Plant-Based Business Podcast. And we're going to have these bonus episodes where you're going to speak to companies maybe at a bit of a different stage. You know, generally, I guess, tend to be more of a scale-up phase. Tell us what you're going to be talking about and what things you're excited to do on the podcast.
Well, me myself, because of my upbringing and moving so much, I'm really a people guy. Mm-hmm. So I love, you know, to focus on the founders behind the companies and getting to know the people and getting to learn the traits they have and the things they've learned that help them get to where they are. That's something mm-hmm. I'd love to focus on. I have this quote I just came across not too long ago. It's I read it. I don't know if it's by him, but I read it in Reid Hoffman's book Blitzscaling. He's one of the mm-hmm. he's one of the co-founders of LinkedIn. You've got to keep your personal learning curve ahead of the company's growth curve. And I found that really touched me, because what I've learned is a few things. Looking at learning, is that we make our decisions based on what we've learned, right? So when you read a book, you get all these pieces of information from it and you internalize it. And the next time you come across a situation where that memory is triggered, you'll maybe look at the situation different. Just a simple example. If you touch a hot stove and you burn your finger, the next time you won't touch the stove when it's on the fire.
You would think so.
I definitely think so. So, but this is something that's true for a lot. And I've been unlearning a lot as well. I've been reading a lot of books on anti-racism and learning how little I knew on the subject, for instance. I've been reading a lot on, of course, business books, personal development books. But the thing that strikes me every time is that after I read a book like that, when I find myself in a situation, a lot of times on the same day or a day later, I interact with the situation differently than I would have when I didn't read it. So I'm really somebody who believes in the part where, especially entrepreneurs but just people in general, need to educate themselves a lot and, you know, do it in a way you like: podcasts, books, documentaries, movies, talking to people, interviewing people. Doesn't really matter how, following people on TikTok, and it doesn't really matter, but it's really important to keep learning. And I would like to, you know, find the quirky things that all these startup founders found that helped them forward and sharing them with the audience, and hoping they can learn from that too and become a better person and a better entrepreneur.
You're involved in many things, obviously. Shoplight, you give it, and the business you've built, and you know, great fashion marketplace I want to check out, and the Entrepreneurs Network, which is a group of entrepreneurs in Netherlands, Switzerland. There's chapters all around the world, right? Of entrepreneurs organizing
all around the world. The biggest chapter is Berlin. We have a chapter in Hamburg as well, in Germany, and we have one in Silicon Valley, or two in Silicon Valley, I think, who are maybe joining forces. And so it's pretty cool. In the Netherlands, we have over 1,000 people now. So it's really a family of people trying to help each other. So that's awesome.
It's really nice. And then you decided to get involved with Evolution and work, you know, with Mikhail, and join forces with Judy, I, and Tristan to build the new platform. What's the thing that all these businesses have in common, and you know, how do they all work together in, you know, your ecosystem of what you're doing?
That's a good question. Well, actually, if you really get down to the core of it, I would say it's connecting. Mm-hmm. That's the word. With the Vegan Entrepreneurs Network in the Netherlands, we're connecting entrepreneurs to make an impact. With Fevolution, we're connecting entrepreneurs with startups and consumers to make an impact. And at Shop Like a Givadam, we're connecting brands, fashion brands, with consumers. So it's always about connecting for me. And I do think it really stems from that early period in my life where I needed to be really good at connecting with people. So basically connecting, or another word for it, networking, connecting people, networking, that's my thing. And I think I'm really good at it. And I always have believed that getting good at something and creating a network around that people know you're good at it, that's the base of every success.
Okay. So we're going to come on to the quick fire questions. You know, you don't come on the podcast without at least some quick fire questions. Firstly, why do you get up in the morning?
Well, for me, I am one of those lucky people who actually love what they do. Working for me is the same as my hobby. I see it as a big board game. So, I would say I love to contribute to the world, also do what I love and make money at the same time. That's a perfect trinity for me. And I jump out of bed every morning to do it.
Really nice. What are your top three books or podcasts you'd recommend to entrepreneurs?
So I have three. There's this book, it's called gripboek.nl. It's a Dutch book, but they're translating it in English. And I just heard yesterday, I think, that it's almost done, the English transcript. So it's basically a book built on the Getting Things Done and Seven Habits of Highly Effective People logic, but then, you know, makes it more modern. So I really like that book, really helped me. Of course, where it's built on, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. It's one of my all-time favorites. I think I read it first time when I was 20, and I've reread it a lot. So I would recommend that one as well. And last but not least, I just read Stamped, Racism, Anti-Racism, and You. And that really blew me away. It opened my mind and expanded everything I knew about racism, anti-racism, assimilation, segregation, you know, the whole nine yards. So those three books will definitely help you as an entrepreneur on different levels. One is more, you know, about the ethics. One is more about the way how you interact with the world. And one is more about how to manage yourself.
What do you know now that you wish you knew when you started out as an entrepreneur?
That knowledge really is everything in a lot. And I mean, the network part I had down quite early, but I have been depriving myself of a lot of knowledge, but not reading enough, not listening enough to enough podcasts. And so I really would know earlier on that my decision would be so heavily based on the knowledge I accumulated. So if I knew this back then, I would definitely read and consume more important content.
This is so important. I 100% agree. I always say to entrepreneurs, like, how they ask, "Oh, how did you do this? How did you do that?" I'm like, I just read a hell of a lot and I listened a hell of a lot. And, you know, there's so much information and resources out there. If you're a plant-based entrepreneur right now, there's no excuse not to be accessing them all and, you know, getting, because, you know, 5 years ago, none of this stuff existed. So now just fill your boots. It's great.
Totally agree.
Lastly, what do you do to keep yourself sane? It's okay to not be sane.
So it helps doing that I'm doing what I love. But also, I do take a run for three times a week, even in the snow that's now lying here in the Netherlands. Also, just go through the snow, minus 10, don't care. Just go for a run. I meditate where I can to ease my mind. I read the books, and this is, for me, especially in the weekend, if you have like this a good book that's not per se a personal development book or an important book, but just something to enjoy. I really love the moment where you wake up, you don't have to go anywhere, you just take your coffee and you sit in your bed, you know, sit up straight and have the book and a coffee and just read for hours. That's something that really relaxes me. Yeah,
it's lovely. Really good. Okay, so people are going to get to know you really well on this podcast. You're going to see you regularly popping up with episodes over the coming months. Where can they connect with you though? Where can they find Shop Like You Give a Damn? Where can they find you on the internet?
Yes. So you can connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm Stefan Stegeman on LinkedIn. It's quite easy. / Stefan Stegeman if you want to look for me via the URL. So that's where I'm mainly at. But also, of course, on fevolution.com, you can find me there. You can connect with me there and message me there. And if you're interested in the business, Shop Like You Give A Damn, you can go to shoplikeyougiveadamn.com.
Do you have any intro offers for people listening?
They'll have to message me about that.
Yeah, that's it. There's the incentive to network with Stefan to get your discount. Look, on a personal level, it's been an absolute pleasure to work with you over the last year on Fevolution. I feel like, you know, what we've built now, it just wouldn't have been possible without the input and insight from you and all that experience you've had. So, like, thank you so much. And it's going to be a pleasure to have you on the show. And you're going to be able to listen to some different voices to me and Judy. Different perspectives. So it's a pleasure to have you on, and everyone will hear from you soon, and I'll see you virtually basically tomorrow.
it's an absolute pleasure to work with you as well. I'm honored, actually, because I've always looked up to you guys, and I'm really looking forward to do this podcast.
Hello, Damien here, and thank you for listening to this episode of the Plant-Based Business Podcast brought to you by us here at Fevolution. So if you head on over to fevolution.com, you can join our community of investors and startups and people building solutions to a brighter future. And if you enjoyed this show, please head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a positive review. It really helps us in getting the message out there and getting more people to discover all the positive stories that we're sharing. You can, of course, give us a social media share. Please tag us at Fevolution. We're on all the social media channels. And you can email me at damien@fevolution.com if you want to reach out directly. We love hearing from you listening to the podcast. I'm honestly amazed at all the messages we receive. And, you know, it really gives us the encouragement to keep making this show for you. And all your feedback is always appreciated. And as always, a big thank you to Bridie Addison-Child, who edits this podcast, and for all our guests and all of you, our listeners, for supporting the show. So thank you, and until the next time, bye.